Hello and welcome to The Story Pilgrim, the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. This episode is about a place and career that is extremely close to my heart, the theatre, and in particular, the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. Before we delve in, please make sure that you are following the podcast. Click on the black follow button. Go to our website, www.thestorypilgrim.com, sign up for our monthly newsletter, and have a look at our blog. Please and thank you. The Theatre Royal Drury Lane, currently where Samantha Barks is starring in Frozen, but it's a little more than that. For theatre lovers, this is a site for pilgrimage. It plays a significant role in the development of theatre, and some of the reasons why we say we do the things the way we do them in the theatre originates from here. So, let's jump straight in and find out more. I am walking along Fleet Street in London. Fleet Street, famous for, in years gone by, having all of the newspapers on there. But towards the west end of Fleet Street, you have the Royal Courts of Justice. Then I'm going up and around to a place that I have been associated with for nearly coming up to 3 years now, the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, the oldest established continuously operating theatre in the world. There has been a theatre on that site since 1663. They think that there was entertainment venues on there prior to that, but we don't have any like official documentation. King Charles II came back from his exile in France in 1660 after the Puritans had been kicked out. And he reinstated theatre as the Puritans had put a stop to any entertainment. They banned entertainment. They demolished a lot of the theatres, burnt a lot of them to the ground. But the Puritans go over to America and King Charles II comes back. And in 1663 he grants two royal patents. The first is to a gentleman called William Davenant, and he builds the predecessor to the Royal Opera House. And then the second one, as I said, was to a gentleman called Thomas Killigrew, who built the first Theatre Royal. Now his theatre in 1663 was called the Theatre Royal Bridges Street. The entrance to Drury Lane now is on Catherine Street, and Catherine Street used to be Bridges Street. So his theatre was called the Theatre Royal Bridges Street. That was up there for a few years, lasted about, well, it survives the Great Fire of London of 1666. 1674 it does burn down, and they put, so the first theatre was very much like the Globe, you know, it was round, it was wooden, it was open, it had about 400 seats. But the second theatre was a stone building, it had about 2,000 seats. It was up in 1674. They think it was designed by Christopher Wren, but there's no actual official documentation saying that Wren designed it, but it has a lot of his hallmarks. And that was the first theatre to actually have its entrance on Drury Lane. So they called it the Theatre Royal that is on Drury Lane. Doesn't exactly trip off the tongue, does it? But no, they changed the name to Theatre Royal Drury Lane in 1709, and that's what it's been known ever since. It's been plagued with a lot of fires. It burnt down. Well, it started to crumble down. The third owner, Richard Sheridan, he bought the building in 1778. By the 1790s, it was really getting into quite a bit of disrepair. But also Covent Garden was coming in, an area thriving for trade and for theatre. So Richard, he saw the potential for much larger audiences. So 1791, he knocks down Wren's building, because it really had gone past a state of repair. And he puts up this huge, massive structure, this really big theatre, 3,600 seats. I mean, that theatre was built to last for centuries. So, of course, after 15 years, it burnt down. And then in 1812, Benjamin Wyatt built the building that we have today. Andrew Lloyd Webber, Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, owns the theatre now. And when he did buy it, he vowed that one day he wanted to restore it back to its original Georgian glory, because we still had all the blueprints and stuff. So 2019, he began a huge restoration, and £60 million is the official figure. It's more like £80 million of private funding and a little bit of Andrew's own money. They have the Theatre or Drury Lane restored to its original Georgian glory, and it's absolutely stunning. It's a beautiful theatre. I give the tours around it when I can. I have to run across and try and get across Kingsway before the traffic lights change. So I'm just going to take you round it. If you know me and you're ever in London, or you are in London and you want to come on a tour, just give me a shout, because there is a ton of history there. There is a ton of stories, and it pretty much is the reason. There's a lot of things that have been developed in this theatre, which basically is why we have theatre the way we have it today. Moving scenery, regular rehearsal, naturalistic acting, all started here because of the people that were involved with it. People like David Garrick, Richard Sheridan, Sarah Siddons, Ira Aldridge, Charles Macklin, and in more modern times, you know, we got Andrew Lloyd Webber. I'll talk about a few of those people as I take you around the building. Lovely to hear the bells of St. Clement Danes Church, a church designed by Sir Christopher Wren. That was playing away in the background as I walked past. Oranges and Lemons played the bells of St. Clement's. There is so much to tell you about. Where do I start? Well, it is the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. How about we start with the Royal Connection? So here I am in the Royal Retiring Room. If any royalty come, this is their private area where they can just let down their guard. There's a double door and then another single door which goes out to the Royal Box. Every reigning British monarch since 1812, bar one, has retired in this room when they were the monarch. The one is King Charles. He hasn't been here since he's been made king, but he has obviously been here as the Prince of Wales many, many times. The stories of Diana being in here with a young William and Harry and them throwing ice creams at each other. There's a wonderful painting in here of June, actress, singer, dancer, painted by Herbert Draper. June was an actor here, and sadly, she was in her early teenage years. She fell underneath the stage and fell into the workings of the hydraulic lifts and stuff, and she died underneath the stage. So there's a little dedication to her here. And then there's a wonderful painting here by G.D. Leslie called Fortunes. It's a beautiful painting. It's one of my favourites. It's just of some ladies and children sat by a little stream as a lady dropping flowers into the stream. And Andrew bought that in 2019, I think for about £230,000. There's a genuine Waterford crystal chandelier in here, which is worth about $250,000. But yeah, talking about us being the only theatre in the world to have two royal boxes, George III came here a lot while he could. He loved all of the theatre here. And one evening, the story goes that he was waiting for a production to begin, and his son, the Prince Regent, who was later to become George the Fourth, walks in drunk as a skunk. They get into a little kerfuffle, they get into a little fight. We have to physically pull them apart. We had to put his son on one side and George on the other. And so they were basically, George was banished to the other side of the theatre. So that's how we ended up having two royal boxes here at Drury Lane, and remain so. In the King's Gallery, there's some wonderful paintings in here. They're all copies, but there's one of Charles II, Nell Gwynne, Thomas Killigrew, Richard Sheridan, David Garrick, George II. And there's a lovely picture here of Drury Lane when it burnt down in 1812. It pretty much lit up the entire skyline because it was one of the tallest buildings at that point. There's a real famous quote from Richard Sheridan. He was the owner of it at that time. He rushed over here. He was in Parliament debating. He got over here, and by the time he got here, the flames had hit the roof. There was nothing that he could do. So the story goes is that he just walked across the road to a pub. He got himself a drink, he sat in the window, and he just watched his theatre burn to the ground. Apparently somebody asked him, you know, well, what are you doing? And he said, may a man not take a glass of wine by his own fireside? Poor Richard, in that moment, he still had a little bit of humour. He was plunged into a lot of debt by that, but he does end up marrying well, and he gets himself out of debt, so all was well in the end. I'm on the upper level of our rotunda now, and you can hear it's quite echoey. Echo! And that's because the roof is designed on the Parthenon from Rome. It looks absolutely stunning. And then you look down to the lower rotunda, and there's some statues in there. There's two of Shakespeare. One of them was outside the building for quite a long time. The other one, which stands in the middle, is quite a famous. It's a copy of a famous Shakespeare statue. The actual statue, the actual proper one, is in the British Museum. But the interesting thing about that is it is Shakespeare's head, obviously, because it's Shakespeare, but the body was modelled on David Garrick. So David Garrick's statue is also in there. There's Edmund Kean in there, and then Michael Balfe. Michael Balfe was a musical director here, and he only wrote opera. And he felt that that was really classist. Only the rich people came to write opera. So he wanted to write something for the everyday man in the street. So in 1843, he writes The Bohemian Girl. Amazing music, but terrible lyrics, apparently. But that went on to be like the blueprint for the modern musical. It toured around. It was a huge success. So we have Michael to thank for every musical written since, apart from Grease 2. I'm not putting that in the list. The origins of the modern-day musical, The Bohemian Girl of 1843. Fancy a spot of afternoon tea? Don't mind if I do. Let's head off to the Grand Saloon. So I'm now in our Grand Saloon. This is one of my favourite areas of Drury Lane. It's absolutely beautiful. There's three big chandeliers in here with two rooms off the either end of it. The Richard Rogers room and the Oscar Hammerstein room. I come down towards the Richard Rogers room because here in the corner is a bust. There's busts in all the corners, but there's a bust of Ira Aldridge. Now, I always like to point him out when I take people around because not many people know who Ira Aldridge is. His dates are on the plinth here, 1807 to 1867. Ira was an African-American actor during those times, and he was the first black actor to ever play Othello. Now, Edmund Kean was playing Othello at the Covent Garden Theatre when he became very sick and he died at the age of 45. Ira was in town at the time, and they took a punt on him and they put him on as Othello to much acclaim. If you read some of the reviews of Ira, they're actually quite racist in a way. They talk about how his big fat lips allow him to have a big booming voice. It's quite sad. He only played once here at Drury Lane, and it was as King Lear in Lear. And when he did, they asked him to chalk up. He had to white up to play King Lear, which is just ridiculous. He ends up in Poland in a pauper's grave because people just get very, very upset about him because of the colour of his skin. And we talk about today how diversity and inclusivity is so important. Imagine what it was like for Ira in the 1800s. He was like one of the trailblazers of just trying to be included. He must have an amazing story. There is a play about him. Adrian Lester plays him in this play. It's called Red Velvet. It was on at the Tricycle Theatre to much acclaim. I think Ira's history needs to be pulled out there. So Adrian, if you're listening, Denzel Washington, if you're listening, Idris Elba, if you're listening, please play him in a movie, because his story really needs to get put out there. So important. If I come out from the Grand Saloon and come round the back of the area, we come to an area, a corridor, side of the auditorium, and there's this wonderful painting by Ronnie Wood. Ronnie Wood of the Rolling Stones, and it's just got loads of people on it. It's at the Ivy, so I think it's called the Ivy. Does it have a name here? Yeah, the Ivy, Ronnie Wood, 2000. And it just has a load of celebrities. So if I just, Des Lynam, Melville Bragg, Naomi Campbell, Eddie Jordan, Elaine Page, Michael Parkinson, Bill Kenwright, Tom Stoppard, Mick Jagger, Louise Fennell, Charlie Watts, Keith Richards, Jimmy White, Jane Britt, David Furnish, Don Black, Elton John, Michael White, Alan Yentob, Kate Moss, Afghan Mystery, Sally Green, Mirella Fostrop, Don Black, Ronnie's in there, Anita Land, Betty Jackson. It's a wonderful thing. We don't take people on tour here, and there's not many people that are going to see this. So if you ever do come with me, ask me about the painting by Ronnie Wood. It's really, really cool. Right, I am now up at the top of the back of the Grand Circle. The reason why I've come up here is I can tell you about our most famous ghost here at Drury Lane. He is a stylish 18th century gentleman who wears a grey tricorn hat, a grey suit and grey boots, and is known as the Man in Grey. Yeah, so he typically walks across the top of the Grand Circle, as I am doing now. He will walk down the aisle. He walks out into midair, he turns left and he walks through the wall. Now, in 1847, we were doing a restoration of the inside of the building for the first time, and they wanted to knock a hole in the wall over there in the auditorium to put a door in. They did, and when they did so, they found bricked up in the wall a man. He was dead, obviously, because he's been in a wall for how many years? The dagger that killed him was still in his ribs. They took the body and they buried it in a burial ground just north of Russell Street on Drury Lane. That is now a private gardens. They believe that that is the Man in Grey. He is supposed to be seen when he likes a production. So in 1999, the entire cast of Miss Saigon, all 53 of them, were giving their second bow of a matinee, and they all report seeing him sat in seat D1. I'm right next to D1 right now. All 53 of them said that they saw him sat there. He's been seen by members of the audience, members of the cast, members of the crew, and the rumour goes, like I said, he is only seen when he likes a performance. A lot for Miss Saigon, a lot for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Hasn't been seen yet for Frozen. Ira Aldridge, Ronnie Wood, and the Man in Grey. Such a diverse collection of stories, and I'm barely scratching the surface. Can you believe that about finding a dead man bricked up in a wall? It is a true story. Now, let's head down to one of the oldest parts of the theatre, the substage underneath the stage. So back down, and if I go in here, I can go underneath the stage. The underneath stage area is on two levels. It goes down 40 feet. I'm up on the upper level now. The orchestra pit is right in front of us. That has been doubled in size. Yeah, it's pretty big. So I'm now on stage right wings, and the wings here are very thin. It's the deepest stage in London. It goes back 80 feet, it's about 40 feet across. But the wings are very, very thin. They're only about 10 feet on either side. And in Frozen, you have this massive long bridge that comes across. And people are like, how does that come across? It basically concertinas. I'm stood next to the bridge now. It's upstage behind the backdrop. And it just basically concertinas and rolls its way out. And it's on a track. You can see the track, and there's ropes in the stage. So it's really, really clever. They're set up for a concert tonight. So the stage is, but they've put a completely black flooring over it. But it is one of the most spectacular stages now. I'm going to go into the auditorium and tell you about what we can do with the stage. So I am in our auditorium. I'm sat in B26 in the Royal Circle, one of the best seats in the house because you're up one level and you get a direct view onto the stage. 1,993 seats, that's about 200 seats less than the old auditorium. The old auditorium had quite a lot of sightline issues, and during the restoration they thought about something that people don't really usually think about when you are building a theatre. And that's leg room. They took out four rows in the stalls to create more leg room down there. And what they've done up in the circles, you've got the Royal Circle, the Dress Circle and the Balcony, they've moved them closer to the stage. So that not only makes you feel more connected with the stage, but it also gives you more room in the circle. So you get great leg room in here now. In the auditorium, what they've done is on the Prince's side, they've embroidered every seat with the feathers of the Prince of Wales. And on the King's side, you have the Monarch's crest. So if you do come and see a show here, just check your seat and see if you're a guest of the Prince or a guest of the King. Now, the most impressive thing that they can do here at Theatre Royal Drury Lane now is that they can take down the front of the Royal Circle. So the Royal Circle front will just come off. They can raise the level of the stage to the Royal Circle level, basically taking out the stalls, and then they will create a whole new floor. And that way, what they'll be able to do is they can be able to do then theatre in the round, theatre in the thrust. It's going to be amazing. Andrew Lloyd Webber has said that he wants to bring Shakespeare back to this theatre. And I believe that's probably what they'll do when they do it. We've no idea when that's going to happen. Because Frozen is on here until September 24. And at the moment, we don't know what's happening after that. It's a beautiful theatre. It is a stunning theatre. And I like to think the reason why we have Frozen in it after the restoration is, well, you think about who the primary audience is for Frozen. It's children. They come and they have this amazing, grand first experience of live theatre. Hopefully, they are going to be hooked for life and we have theatre lovers growing up with this amazing experience. Shall we get back to our theatre history lesson? Come on then. I am now sat in our Royal Box. It is a Friday and they are getting ready for an evening performance. It's about quarter to two. So they're clearing the stage, they're testing the lights, they are testing the sound, they're clearing it up from all that happened last night. Now the reason why I'm in the Royal Box, I've mentioned about how we are the only theatre in the world to have two Royal Boxes. Well, boxes actually originate from Drury Lane.
David Garrick was our actor manager here from 1747 to 1776. And he was quite an innovator. He gave us things like moving scenery, regular rehearsals, footlights. He put footlights in to create more of a 3D effect upon stage. He also would use coloured lights. He would wrap coloured silks around a candle. And ironically, when we hear about that, he also was a stickler for rigorous safety standards. He also asked his actors to act naturalistically. Prior to that, they would always use like big, bold, over-the-top gestures. There was a lot of shouting involved. If you were the first actor to originate a role, every actor that played that role after you was expected to do exactly the same as you. Same gestures, same inflections, everything. So he changed all of that, and he introduced naturalistic acting. But when he did, he had a problem. It was possible for you, as a member of the audience, to buy a seat and actually sit on the stage. It was typically bought by rich young men who wanted to show off their latest fashions. They didn't have TikTok or Instagram back in those days, so their social media was buying a seat on a stage and showing off in front of the entire audience. Now, when David introduced naturalistic acting, he said, well, you can't stay there because you're not part of my play. So he created, as a concession, areas on the side of the stage, boxes where people could still see them. I believe that there is one theatre in this country that still has its boxes on the stage. It's called the Georgian Theatre in Richmond, Yorkshire. It's a tiny, delightful, beautiful little theatre. If you ever have a chance of going there, go. I've had the pleasure of performing there, and it is stunning. Richmond, Yorkshire, the Georgian Theatre. But over the years, the boxes have moved, and they've moved off stage, and they are now where they are. So boxes are basically about where you are sat. It's about being seen, not actually seeing the play. And another thing that happened before that, David Garrick started to use things on stage, and these gentlemen that were sat on stage, they would take these things before he kicked them off. They would start stealing things, little mementos to show off and say, hey, look, I got this from a Garrick production. So it proved expensive for Garrick to have to keep on like making these things and put them back. So he started to stamp in ink everything that was on the stage, property of the theatre. That then gets shortened to theatre properties, and it then gets shortened to props. And that's where we get the word props from. From basically rich men stealing. But the fact that that started here in this theatre, and now not just in theatre, but in film and television throughout the entire world, we use the term props, and it originated here at Theatre Royal Drury Lane. That's pretty cool. And really, really, that's why I love showing people around this place, because there is so much to it that is important to my life as an actor. And in particular, as a theatre actor, it's so significant. So I am now down in our tunnel, which for a very long time was the only way, when a performance was on, for you to get from one side of the stage to the other. It's still a substantial tunnel, but the original tunnel was about 6 feet deeper, and then there are other tunnels going off. On the one side you've got five tunnels going off one. Yeah, five tunnels both way. Going towards underneath the stage, they're all bricked up. Well, they're all bricked up, but on the going towards the stage, they're flush. But on this side, going towards the auditorium, they are inset a little bit. And there's rumours here, you know, one of the tunnels went across the road to the pub, and Charles II would use that to come in secretly and see Nell Gwynn. That's a rumour. But a couple of these tunnels do go down towards the Thames. And now when a sailor's ship was in dock,
they would find work elsewhere because they weren't paid a wage, and it'd be a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks they'd be in dock for. So they come and work backstage. It's why now, over 360 years later, we still call everybody who works backstage the crew. It's why we have such nautical terms as stage hands. They were deck hands. The lighting rigging, the rigging on the ship. They were pretty much doing the same sort of things they were doing on stage as they were on the ships. It's also why it's regarded bad luck for you to whistle on a stage. It comes from the sailors. When the sailors were out at work at sea, they would use a coda whistles to raise and lower the sails, because a whistle could be heard much better over the wind and the sea. So they would use those same codes when they were in the wings and in the fly tower, raising and lower the scenery. So if you're an actor on stage and you just happen to whistle one of those codes, it is going to mean they're just going to drop a ton of scenery in. It's going to come down, hit you on the head, and not very good circumstances there. In this tunnel, we have a wonderful lighting effect here with these just wonderful lights. There's five of them just hanging down, and we talk about some of our ghosts here. Particularly, we talk about Charles Macklin and Dan Leno. And when we mention their names, the one light at the end of the tunnel, sometimes, not all the time, will just flicker, particularly when you mention their name. It's not flickering at the moment. It is dimmer than all the others. That might just be because it's an older bulb. But it will flicker when you mention their names. And a couple of times it just completely goes out. Just the one. It's really weird. So there are things happening in this theatre that you just don't have an explanation for. Somebody, when I was getting ready for this 2.5 years ago, when I was rehearsing, I was in the Rotunda area, I was on my own, there was nobody near me, and I genuinely heard somebody whisper Darren in my ear, Darren, and there was nobody there. And one of the ghosts, Charles Macklin, is supposed to shout out people's names because he knew everybody in the theatre. So that didn't happen in this area, it happened out in the Rotunda area. But yeah, our tunnel, the oldest part of the building. The Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, 361 years of theatrical history. It's a history where modern theatre began. It is a gem in the world of theatre, and I highly recommend you pay it a visit. Whether you live in London or you're visiting, come down and say hi. Frozen is playing until September 2024, and rumour has it that after that it will be a series of one-off concerts up until Christmas, and then it will be White Christmas. But all of that is just a rumour at the moment. The Story Pilgrim was written and performed, produced by me, Darren Hill. Anya Backer played the original music on the wonderful Sean the Harp. Please remember to like this podcast, click on that follow button so you make sure that you never miss an episode. Sign up for our newsletter, find us on social media, just search The Story Pilgrim. Thank you for joining us. Keep listening, and buen camino.